Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, the EHR, and eligible professionals, improving patient care and outcomes, which is certified by Medscape and presented by William F. Bria, MD, and Howard M. Landa, MD. Dr. Landa is a Chief Medical Information Officer, Alameda County Medical Center, Oakland, California, Pediatric Urologist, Director of Medical Informatics, Hawaii Permanente Medical Group, Honolulu, Hawaii. Dr. Landa has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for CMIO Advisors, Maestro Strategies. Dr. Landa does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Landa does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Bria is a Chief Medical Information Officer, Shriners Hospital for Children, Tampa, Florida. Dr. Bria has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for the National Center for Research Resources, Phillips Corporation, and Precise Corporation. Dr. Bria does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Bria does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to describe the criteria for eligible professionals to demonstrate meaningful use in the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act Incentive Program for implementation, adoption, and demonstration of meaningful use of EHRs, and the implications of meaningful use criteria for improving patient care. This activity is supported by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a U.S. Department of Health and Human Services agency. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
I'm Howard Landa. I'm the Chief Medical Information Officer for Alameda County Medical Center in Oakland, and I'm also a practicing pediatric urologist at Kaiser Permanente in Hawaii.
Hello, I'm Dr. Bill Bria. I'm the Chief Medical Information Officer for the Shriners Hospitals for Children and the President of the Association of Medical Directors of Information Systems, or AMDIS.
The learning objectives for today's session are to define meaningful use, to identify the meaningful use criteria, and to recognize opportunities for improvement in practices that can be addressed by implementation of an electronic health record. So, Bill, what is the Electronic Health Record Incentive Program? Why are we doing this?
Well, the Electronic Health Record Incentive Program is an effort at trying to be very specific about the evaluation, implementation, and measurement with regards to the introduction of the electronic health record and data into the process of healthcare on a regular basis.
And this is a program that starts now and runs until 2015?
Correct.
And then after 2015, there actually are potential penalties for not having a meaningful use system in place.
That's correct, Eric.
Medicare-eligible providers and Medicaid-eligible providers, as well as Medicare and Medicaid-eligible hospitals, are included in the plan?
Correct.
And there's, as I said, a potential for Medicare reimbursement decreases if systems aren't in place.
Right.
So what is the purpose of meaningful use?
That's a great question. I think the purpose of meaningful use is the final effort at trying to integrate, if you will, information technology into the daily practice of medicine. We've been looking at computers in healthcare for over 35 years. The idea that there has been demonstration that the completeness of the information alone could be a significant benefit to continuity of care, to communication of elements of a patient's medication list, for example, and could result in decreased errors of omission and commission for patient care is really now at hand.
And this program is actually a byproduct of the American Recovery and Reimbursement Act, the stimulus package. It's designed to incentivize the use of electronic health records and requires the use of a certified system, as well as you stated, the ability to submit clinical quality data and other measures, as well as exchange information with providers and hospitals outside of your organization.
Absolutely. Okay.
So we're going to be talking about the meaningful use requirements for providers. This is a phased approach. Phase one is 2011 and 12, and it has a laundry list of requirements. There are 15 core requirements that need to be met, and then a menu set of 10 requirements of which providers can pick five. There is a large set of clinical measures that can be reported. Eligible providers are required to choose 9 different measures and report on these, and these measures are based on the type of practice and the clinical environment that the practitioner works in. Bill, there are a whole lot, as I said, there's a laundry list of things here. What are the benefits? Why are we doing this? And you know, how did they come up, you think, with this particular list?
Well, this list, Howard, I think is a key building blocks, if you will, of the information categories and the technical categories that need to be in place for us to really achieve meaningful use. CPOE, order entry, the action arm of what you and I do every day in the practice of medicine, is a cornerstone. It is one that has been tossed around. We are still talking about the minority of clinicians and hospitals in the country having that benefit, yet without it, the idea of providing the best evidence at the point of intervention in patients' care can occur. Drug-drug and drug allergy interaction checks are one of those things that every single physician we've ever met says, well, of course, we should know about them, and we should never be in a situation where we've prescribed the wrong medicine about a known allergy or about a known drug interaction. Yet it still happens every day in the non-automated world. Problem lists, medication and allergy lists, are really one of the key indexes of the book, if you will, of a patient's record. Without that index, you don't know what chapter to go to. You don't know what has really occurred where in the record before, and so is essential, yet has been honored in the breach to date. Therefore, it is time for us to get to it. Smoking status, of course, remains one of the most common reasons for disease induction in our population. And although there are many efforts to do so, the idea of identifying patients for opportunities of smoking cessation is therefore part of this list. Providing clinical summaries for patients in each office visit is a very important aspect of the contract that we have as clinicians with our patients and their care. The idea of patients wondering what the list of diagnoses and treatments are about and for should no longer occur with this element of the core objectives. And finally, part of that trust, part of that contract is the security and privacy of their information that should only go to where it needs to go and where the patient is understanding it is going.
So these are the core things. These are the requirements. And I think there's been a lot of comment on these prior to the regulations being released. Mm-hmm. And I think most of us agree that these things really are imperatives to provide safe, quality care and to enhance the care that that is the promise of electronic health records. What about the menu sets? So we have 10 possible objectives for the providers to use, but they get to pick.
Right. And I think the idea of providing an on-ramp for all of this is really what why there's a selection option, at least at the beginning. We fully expect that the number of unselected items need to be filled in over the remaining phases of meaningful use. And so generating patient lists by specific conditions, patient-specific education are part of this menu set.
And in the future, the anticipation is that these will all be required and they're all important.
Yes, sir.
Clinical quality measures. We've all been reporting clinical quality measures for a long time. Mm-hmm. There's 42, I think, items in the list. Mm-hmm. What is the... We've been doing this for a while, but this is a little bit different.
Yeah, I think the fact that we're finally codifying and then going to have a consistent identification, that's the important part, because the ability to compare data from around the country in an electronic way is really a instrument of medical real-time, on-the-ground medical clinical research. Yet it has been elusive for the vast majority of physicians in the country, because the vast majority of us are not practicing in an academic environment. On the other hand, this list will slowly, as you've already said, be inclusive for the entire meaningful use cycle as we complete it, is something we fully expect. Closing this gap, again, is the aspect of using an electronic healthcare environment to allow it to inform us about our opportunities for intervention, for improvement, and for education to improve our patients' care.
So we put in a system. We've identified all these criteria. Yeah. How do we actually report? How do we get the next step?
Well, the eligible provider must demonstrate meaningful use of a certified EHR technology, which is an important issue, and one that a number of people have questions about with regards to the certification process. Every detail of that needs to be understood every year that they participate in the program.
But the Medicaid providers are in a different situation.
Correct.
For the Medicaid providers, they can actually qualify just for trying.
Right.
If they sign a contract, if they begin to adopt and they begin their implementation or upgrade a current system from one that isn't certified for meaningful use to one that is, they can actually draw down meaningful use dollars just for that participation.
Right.
In addition, though, once meaningful use is obtained, they're going to need to maintain that situation every year and document that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to attest to the requirements and submit their scores for the various measures that require percentages of compliance. We've talked a little bit about decision support.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned allergies and drug allergy decision support. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little more about the importance of that and the benefits of that?
You know, the problem with the electronic records that already exist is often that the allergy information is not codified, that the allergy information is not revalidated on a regular basis. And so, unfortunately, one of the early aspects of electronic health records in displaying drug and drug allergy information has often been derided. The necessity to ensure that drug information, allergy information, is accurate, is up to date, requires the clinicians to be directly engaged with the creation, maintenance, and use of that list. Without it, the information quality and the risk to doing something none of us wants to do, that is prescribe a medicine to which the patient has been known to be allergic or to provide a new drug that results in mishap as a result of interaction, can occur.
I'd like to change gears a little bit and talk. We've been talking about the requirements. We've been talking about how to draw down the incentive dollars. But in the big picture, you and I have both been doing this for more years than I'd like to talk about. But what are the real benefits? I mean, it isn't just getting a problem list that's up to date.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here? Where's the anticipation that this is going to take us?
Howard, I think the aspect of physicians extending with their tools, their reach with regards to their diagnostic capabilities, their therapeutic understanding and capabilities, and most importantly, testing the actual benefits of what they thought they were going to get as a result of interventions with their patients' care, now clearly requires a new tool. That tool is the electronic health record. If we do not understand this endeavor as the practice of medicine rather than an imposition of information technology for some other reason on us, we will miss one of the greatest opportunities of improving what we do as professionals for our patients' care.
I think that's a key point. You know, this is not a technology that we're implementing. This is a shift in how we practice medicine and how we take care of our patients.
Yes, sir.
And a shift in the expectation for quality, safety, and the real return on the healthcare dollars that are spent.
Right.
Implementation mm-hmm. is really the start. Mm-hmm. We've all taken and evaluated our practices and I've worked on putting systems in, mm-hmm. but once they're in place, that really is the first step in the journey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One of my learnings is that when you do this at first. You electronify your current processes, but it's the optimization, it's the re-engineering both of the tools and of your practice and the way you do things, your workflows, that really results in the true benefits beyond just getting the meaningful use dollars.
You know, there's the old saying, physician, heal thyself. The idea that data is something that as clinicians we respect, as we have our journals, we have our professional societies and our presentations, yet we honor sometimes in the breach when it regards our individual practices and the regular review using real data about the outcomes that we've delivered for our patients' care.
We've touched on clinical decision support, and I want to come back to that a little bit. We've talked about, you know, people experience decision support as an interruptive alert, an allergy message that says you've done the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. But everything we do in building these tools is really a decision support piece.
Yes.
Everything we do to integrate them into our workflow are decisions you make to support that practice.
Mm-hmm.
One of my greatest learnings was a decision support alert to remind providers to order mammograms.
Mm-hmm.
We put the alert in, and we did get some benefit. But until we went back and reworked the flow of data and the flow of the actual things people did, we didn't get as much benefit. When we allowed anyone, the medical assistant, the nurse, or the physician, to order the mammogram, when we put in a system to intercept the results and work directly with the patients, Hawaii Permanente became the number one health plan in 2009 for mammography screening. I think these are the kind of stories that we're going to tell that are going to justify the investment as well as the real importance of putting in an electronic system to support your practice.
Absolutely.
Any other thoughts on why we're going, where we're going?
I think why we're going is that we're ready for a great leap. This leap is that until now, if you were not a researcher yourself, if you were not fortunate enough to be in an environment that kept superlative records on every single aspect of the care you were delivering to your patients, you were basically flying blind. All of us, I believe that we are delivering good care for our patients. The idea of now having, with database-based decision-making and demonstration of not only compliance, but our satisfaction and our patients' satisfaction with this care is truly the real delivery on evidence-based medicine that we've touted for a great many years in the practice of medicine in this country.
So, Bill, I'd like to talk about one other aspect that I think people are very concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big change.
Yeah.
This is an expensive investment.
Mm-hmm.
This is a major change in the way you do business, as we have described.
Mm-hmm.
And physicians are very concerned about the money they're going to spend, the impact to their productivity, and on a go-forward basis, how are they going to deal with making the meaningful use, drawing down the dollars, and then getting a system that actually supports what they do. What can we tell people to make them feel more comfortable that this is really possible, this can be done, and there are good reasons to do it?
Great question, Howard. I think the most obvious answer to that for me is that it's already been done by a number of our colleagues, and it's been done by our colleagues in settings varying from the typical statement of the large academic center down to very small hospital practices. It is no longer, perhaps because of the evolution of the technology, perhaps because the evolution of our practice of medicine, that is the case. Therefore, the reassurance that is it possible, has anybody done this, can be answered absolutely yes. The fact that we have an incentive program to help us along over the next number of years to make have a better reason to perhaps unload some of the financial burden is a benefit. However, I think we would be remiss if we thought that this change is something that once those dollars are done, once the program is over, that we should go back to the way things have been. This is like saying that I'd like to stop ordering MRIs. I would like to go back to tomograms in the old-fashioned way versus CT scans of the chest, my practice. It makes no sense. What I believe we all need to do is to share stories. We need to share clinical evidence of value as we go forward. And that can be anything from, you know, it was great to have the complete record when I saw the patient and I was given a consult to decide what to do with the problem. Two, I was given an alert just in time that there was, in fact, a risk for a intervention that shouldn't be done in this time frame. The patient was in renal failure. We were going to use dye that could produce further deterioration, whatever. But the point is to start to use our knowledge instruments in the practice of what medicine is today, which is a very time-pressured, very complex task, is only in recognition, you know, the human brain isn't there to just try to memorize things. And in fact, in medical education, memorization is being devalued. Mm. The idea that information instruments, such as the information systems, are now essential to be brought to bear has already happened in so many other disciplines in so many different ways that it is past time that we need to understand that this is truly our responsibility, not as technologists, but as physicians, to incorporate and to effectively use this tool.
And as you say, this has been done in many settings, in every specialty,
yes,
in large practices, in small practices. And I think one of the most interesting things I've found, and I've talked to a lot of physicians who have implemented systems in their office, I have never heard anybody who, after 6 months of a system that's been reasonably well implemented, want to go back.
Absolutely right.
There are certainly times when they're frustrated by it, when they want to change it, but nobody wants to go back to paper. We had a situation where we had a downtime a year in, and we were down for about 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And during that time, my partners forgot how to do something without the tool. Mm. I said, well, you just go and you write on paper, and you write paper orders, and we will get them done. And they looked at me like I was crazy. So I think it speaks to the fact that these things are almost addictive, in that once you have them, once you're comfortable with them, nobody wants to go back to the old way.
Absolutely right.
Thank you, Bill.
Pleasure, Howard.
And thank you to our audience for participating in this activity. To proceed to the online CME/CE test, please click on the Earn CME CE credit link on this page. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, the EHR, and eligible professionals, improving patient care and outcomes. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.